Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
A prime ministerial double in Mongolia, a name to note in Chicago, and advertising on the radio. It's August 1922.
100 years from today.
World News Update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. The Allied Reparations Commission has unanimously decided to grant Germany a six-month moratorium on reparations payments. After 3 long years, is the Greco-Turkish War over? The Battle of Dumludnash appears to have ended in a Greek rout. Indeed, so chaotic and ineffective is the Greek general staff that it fell to the Turkish commander, Mustafa Kemal, to inform his Greek opposite number, General Trikoupis, that he had been appointed as the commander-in-chief of the Greek army in Asia Minor. Unfortunately, as General Trikoupis had just been captured by the Turks, this promotion was not of much use to him. He promptly surrendered his sword to Kemal Pasha. Greek forces are now in chaotic retreat west, and it is unclear whether they will be able to retain any territory in Asia Minor.
All that are out of Ireland, let their happy feelings flow, like the old river channels flowing free.
Further west in the Emerald Isle, more war and more chaos. Following the sudden death of Arthur Griffith and the killing of Michael Collins by Irish Republicans, the provisional government of the incoming Irish Free State has lost its two most prominent personalities. As the late Mr. Collins is laid to rest in Glasnevin Cemetery following a military funeral, the replacement of both men as chairman of the Free State government and president of the so-called Dáil Éireann has been announced. W.T. Cosgrave, the current finance minister. Mr. Cosgrave is little known outside nationalist circles in Dublin, and he has a lot to do in the 3 months before the Irish Free State achieves full dominion status. These include big, if abstract, things such as the ongoing alignment of British and nationalist political theory as to what is taking place here, and unglamorous but practical things. Civil servants in the current government departments of Dublin Castle are to be offered a choice of staying on with the new Free State or transferring to the public services of Belfast or London or taking early retirement. But such arrangements need to be in place to avoid even more chaos on December 6th. It's easier in Middle Europa, apparently. In Belgrade, the new nations of Czechoslovakia and the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats and Slovenes have signed a treaty completing the formal creation of the Little Entente that both nations had previously agreed to with the Kingdom of Romania. It is a mutual defence alliance designed to prevent not only any resurgence of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but also any encroachment on the region by other powers. It is not often that two former prime ministers are executed in a single day, but that is what has happened in Mongolia. Dambin Chagdajev and Dogsamin Bodu were founding members of the Mongolian People's Party, who famously travelled to Moscow to make contact with Russian Bolsheviks in 1920 and then returned home to foment revolution. Very successfully, Mr. Bodu succeeded Mr. Chagdajev as prime minister just last year, but both men fell from grace after party leader Solin Danzen took against them and accused them of being counter-revolutionaries. Messrs. Chagdajev and Bodu have been executed by gunshot.
I've got the blue, I've got the blue, I've got the alcoholic blue. No more beer, my heart to cheer. Goodbye, whiskey. Make me pretty. So long, highball. So long, Jim. Oh, tell me when you're coming back. back again.
It looks like they won't be singing the alcoholic blues in Sweden. A referendum on the prohibition of alcohol has been held in the Scandinavian kingdom. Some 889,000 voted ya to a booze ban, but over 925,000, or 51%, voted nay. In the United States, we have a verdict on a case which we have reported previously, a Ku Klux Klan raid on Spanish bootleggers in Inglewood, California, that left a constable, who was also a Klansman, dead. 37 members of the Klan were charged with kidnapping, illegal imprisonment, and assault with intent to commit murder. Jury deliberations took 5 hours, which added to the tension in court, but was due only to the fact that ballots had to be filled out for each individual defendant on each individual charge. When that was accomplished, the jurors returned and all 37 defendants were acquitted. The Klansmen then rushed forward to shake hands with the jury for their, quote, patriotic verdict, after which they swarmed into Judge House's chambers and re-emerged with large supplies of his election campaign posters.
Johnny O'Connor bought an automobile. He took his sweetheart for a ride one Sunday. Johnny was togged up in his best Sunday clothes. She nestled close to his side. Things went just dandy till he got down the road. Then something happened to the old machinery. That engine got his goat, off went his hat and coat. Everything needed repairs. He'd have to get under, get out and get under, to fix his little machine. He was just dying to cuddle his queen. But every minute, when he'd begin it, he'd have to get under, get out and get under. Then he'd get back at the wheel. A dozen times they'd start to hug and kiss, and then the darned old engine, it would miss. And then he'd have to get under, get out and get under, and fix up his automobile.
But how do you get out from under the chaos that is putting your entire automobile business under? Henry Ford has announced that all Ford Motor Company plants will close down on September the 16th because of the present industrial crisis in America. Mr. Ford has no date for reopening the plants. Governor John J. Blaine of Wisconsin is urging President Harding to demand Congress give the federal government authority to seize and operate the coal mines and related railroad operations. Mr. Blaine says it is the only way to avoid the, quote, fatal consequences that are sure to come to the people of this state unless they get coal now. While it's workers' strike, we are reminded that coal mining is a hazardous business to be in. Just ask the family of Francis Peabody, founder of Peabody Coal, the largest private coal company in the world. Notwithstanding the state of the nation, Mr. Peabody had invited his fellow men of wealth to his Tudor Revival estate, Maze Lake Hall, near Chicago, for its first deer hunt of the season. After the hunt was underway, his horse was glimpsed riderless and still, and upon closer inspection, the body of the great coal magnate was lifeless on the ground. Francis Stuyvesant Peabody is dead of an apparent stroke or heart attack at 63. More death in the mining world. An underground fire at the Argonaut Gold Mine in Jackson, California has killed 47 miners.
In Chicago, Chicago, that toddly town, that toddly town. Chicago, Chicago, I'll show you around. I love it, that's your bottom dollar, you lose the blues in Chicago. Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday could not shut down. On State Street, that great street, I just wanna say, don't you on Broadway. Say, they have the time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago, Chicago, my hometown.
That toddling town is full of surprises, even in such routine matters as automobile accidents. Fred Krause's taxi cab was struck very violently by another machine, leaving Mr. Krause rather seriously injured. But when an eyewitness suggested it was the other driver's fault, that man then leapt out, flashed a deputy sheriff's badge, pulled a revolver on the witness, and threatened to shoot him. The gunman was taken to the central police station, where he threatened to have the arresting officer fired and promised to make life hell for any prosecutors of the incident. "I'll fix this thing so easy you won't know how it's done," he boasted. He is now out on bail, but is believed to be the owner of the Four Deuces brothel on Wabash Avenue, by name Alfred Capone. And his famous orchestra with "There's a Sunbeam for Every Drop of Rain." We are not persuaded of the general statistical truth of that proposition after today's headlines, but what a favorite that song has proven with the paying customers at the hit Broadway musical satire Tangerine. The plot, by the expert English farceur Guy Bolton, concerns a group of men who escape from alimony jail to a South Sea island where the women do all the gainful employment while the men lounge about the house all day long. What a strange world that would be. After a phenomenally successful run at the Casino Theatre, Tangerine is closing after 361 performances.
Love her by radio, you will find it radio.
You can now love her by radio to the sound of commercial advertising. At 5:15 p.m. on Monday, August the 28th, station WEAF of New York City made the first ever broadcast of a radio advertisement, a commercial pitch for a new apartment complex in the Jackson Heights neighborhood of Queens. If you don't know of any such Jackson Heights neighborhood, well, the name was recently bestowed by Mr. Edward McDougall of the Queensborough Corporation. There are no actual heights in a topographic sense, but Mr. McDougall is thought to be using the term in the sense of the heights of luxurious living. In his 15 minutes of purchased airtime, a gentleman identified as Mr. Blackwell spoke of the many advantages of a rent-to-own apartment home where one could, quote, enjoy all the latest conveniences and contrivances demanded by the housewife, and yet have all of the outdoor life that the city dweller yearns for, but has deludedly supposed could only be obtained through purchase of a house in the country. Apparently, they are available just across the East River from Manhattan. "You owe it to yourself and you owe it to your family," said Mr. Blackwell, "to leave the hemmed-in, somber-hued, artificial apartment life of the congested city section and enjoy what nature intended you enjoy in bucolic Jackson Heights, Queens."
"Take me out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and cracker jack. I don't care if I never get back."
In sports news, wouldn't you love to be taken out to a ball game like this? The Chicago Cubs and the Philadelphia Phillies, and an all-time Major League Baseball record of 49 runs in the same game. The Cubs eventually won 26-23. A terrible fate for the Japanese Navy cruiser Nitaka. In a storm off the Kamchatka Peninsula, the ship was driven aground and overturned. Of the 301 men, 294 are dead. At Coquimbo, off the coast of Chile, the steamship Itata foundered during a gale, lost its rudder, and went down. The ship managed to launch three lifeboats, all of which capsized. The Itata is reported to have been badly overloaded, and of the 321 persons on board, 309 are dead.
"Three all night are full of silent men.
Was there ever a Rio night like October 15th, 1864? Prince Gaston of Orléans, the Comte du, was the grandson of the French king Louis-Philippe. He became a Spanish army officer and later a Brazilian army officer in the war against Paraguay. And in 1864, notwithstanding that he found her exceedingly unattractive, the dashing Frenchman wed the Crown Princess Isabel in what was Brazil's first ever royal wedding. It was also its last royal wedding. No, not because the Princess Isabel was so reportedly unattractive. The Brazilian Empire was overthrown, and the Princess Imperial and her consort were forced into exile. Monsieur le Comte was returning to Brazil for its centennial celebrations when he died at sea. He was 80. Stephen Smith was born in New York State in 1823, the son of a cavalry officer in the Revolutionary War. He became a surgeon and then in 1866 established the Metropolitan Board of Health in New York City, the first public health agency in the United States. Just 6 years later, he co-founded the American Public Health Association. It is difficult to imagine now a world without the dedicated men who run our public health agencies. Dr. Smith's own good health is an example all in itself. He is dead in his 100th year. David Sharp was a distinguished British entomologist and editor of the Zoological Record. You may never have heard of him, but you might have run into the many creatures named in his honour, among them flies, Drosophila sharpi, ants, Phidola sharpi, and beetles, Lacophilus sharpi. Georges Sorel was an influential French philosopher. He defended political violence, and his theory of the power of myth in collective agency has inspired anarchists, syndicalists, Bolshevists, and fascists to the present day. Others dismiss him as a mere embodiment of the madness and irrationalism sweeping the bourgeois classes at the fin de siècle. Monsieur Sorel is dead at 74.
Wait till the sun shines, Nelly, when the clouds go drifting by. We will be happy, Nelly, don't you sigh. Down lover's lane we'll wander, sweetheart, you and I.
Some Nellies prefer to wait till the sun goes down. Nellie Grant was the only daughter of President Ulysses S. Grant and the first girl of her youthful age to reside in the White House since Abby Fillmore. She scandalized Washington when, aged just 14, she danced all night at a society ball. The president, alarmed by the legions of unsuitable suitors, dispatched Nellie to London, where she was received at court by Queen Victoria, but alas, fell in love with an Englishman. They were married in 1874 in a lavish wedding at the White House, and so the child of an American president became a British subject. And it is said that every night for a whole year, Mr. Grant ended each day by visiting his daughter's empty bedroom in the White House and sobbing uncontrollably. Miss Grant would later return to the United States to be with her ailing father and her American family. Nellie Grant is dead at 67. And that's the way of the world, August 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.